It's the best time of the year. Football season.
Atlantic keeps it, runs 20, 15, to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Joel Atlantic!
Your number one source for Cyclones football. It's former Cyclones talking Cyclones on CycloneFanatic.com.
Landing out of the shotgun, looking to throw. He fires to the end zone for Daly. Touchdown, Iowa State!
This is Barely Audible with Jeff Woody, Zach Spears, and Austin Arnott on CycloneFanatic.com.
Ah, yes. Hello, Cyclone Nation. Welcome on into this week's edition of Barely Audible on CycloneFanatic.com. I'm former Cyclone offensive lineman Zach Spears, and we'll be joined shortly by former Cyclone greats quarterback Austin Arnott and running back Jeff Woody. On Saturday night, we saw Iowa State drop their season opener at home to Northern Iowa 25-20. The Cyclones were very underwhelming throughout most of the night and kicked off the Matt Campbell era about as badly as they could. They struggled with penalties all night, couldn't get the rushing attack going, turned the ball over four times, and got dominated in the time of possession. They've now lost two of their last three against UNI, dating back to a 28-20 loss in 2013. Now, the Cyclones head across the state to Iowa City to take on their in-state rival, a top-20-ranked Iowa Hawkeyes team, who are 1-0 after beating Miami, Ohio on Saturday, 45-21. The three of us have all watched the game and went back and analyzed the game film. On today's show, we'll break down what went wrong on Saturday, go through the ins and outs of the game, as well as preview the Cyhawk game on Saturday to get you ready for the big game. Now, let's bring in the guys and get started. All right, Jeff Woody, former running back, Iowa State Cyclones, you were at the game on Saturday night against UNI. What happened? What went wrong? How did the Cyclones lose this game?
So this is my synopsis. Iowa State played really well, and this isn't in order. It's not like 80% were good and 20% bad, but if you totally throw all the offensive and defensive snaps together, Iowa State played really well, extremely well, on 80% of the snaps. And that includes like those three beautiful touchdown passes that he threw, and Austin can touch more on those. 80% of the snaps were really, really good. 20% of the snaps were the worst mistakes that you can possibly make in a football game, and those mistakes overtook the good ones. And what was funny about this is I said this like on Saturday night when I was talking, because I watched this from up in the media lounge, which, fun fact about that, I knew this because I've done this before. You're not allowed to cheer because, you know, people are trying to
cheer. You cannot cheer.
People are trying to do a job, like write stories and catch notes and listen to the tackles.
Don't tell me you cheered.
We got a third down stop, and I may or may not have clapped a couple times.
Oh, wow. This guy. You were that guy. The guys on the beat always are tweeting about on visiting games.
I'm that guy.
Way to go. Did you get in trouble?
Sorry. No, Mike Green came up and tapped me on the shoulder, and he goes, hey, you're not allowed to cheer in here. And I was like, because I knew as soon as, like, my hands were coming together, and I'm like, I'm not supposed to be doing this. And I just gave, you know, a couple of those. And Mike was like, yeah, you're not allowed to do that.
That is awesome.
But anyway, what's funny about that is, so I was talking about this on Saturday night, and even in Matt Campbell's press availability on Monday, I found out that he has what he calls the 12% rule. And if 12% of your snaps or less are those dumb mistakes, you're going to win the game. And he said, we were way over 12%. Mm-hmm. So he and I are on the same wavelength. So we're good in that department. But, yeah, it was 80% really, really good at all positions except run blocking, offensive line.
Yeah.
And the 20% were really stupid mistakes.
Yeah. Four turnovers and also nine penalties for 89 yards. Two of those penalties were on big, worn runs. Austin, you and I kind of had the same issue to start this game. We couldn't get Cyclone TV to work. And when we finally did get it to work, we got to tune into this. What did you see out of the Cyclones quarterback Lanning in this entire offense on Saturday night?
Like Jeff said, a lot more positive than negative, but the negatives were overlying. I mean, it was one of those things that, you know, watching it unfold, especially the last 6 minutes of the game with Joel, watching it unfold, you're looking at his quarterback rating and he's completing like 65% of his passes. Things are looking great. And then we get to the daunted last 6 minutes where, essentially all of Joel's work up to that point was for naught. I mean, he had made a couple bad throws earlier and missed some guys. I mean, missed some big plays that could have put Iowa State in a better position to score and score touchdowns. But those mistakes at the end of the game, those two interceptions are inexcusable. And that's the one thing that Joel has to take away from this game is to understand. And I did see that only Lazard and who's the linebacker were available for media after the game. So Lanning wasn't even available for media after the game.
Regan Northrup.
Yeah, Northrup. So I think that says something. You know, Joel is a guy that, you know, he's got to take this on himself. And that was a big thing that I struggled with.
And one of the things, to interject, it was again reported at Campbell's presser that after the game in the locker room, after Campbell got done talking, Joel stood up and basically said, "I'm sorry."
Yeah, and he needs to do that 100%. I mean, there's a lot of things that add up to a loss in the football game. There sure could have been a lot of better things done better by Iowa State. Joel Lanning, his shoulders are heavy with that loss. I mean, you're the starting quarterback. You're a guy that's supposed to have been there before. And I think that really speaks to what we talked about last week, guys, how everyone wanted to give Joel Lanning, "Oh, yeah, he played six or seven games. He's experienced." Well, there's still, you know, this is a brand new offense. And that's tough to pick up game one, you know, and not make, you can make mistakes, but the ones he made were colossal. And that's unfortunate. But he did a lot of great things, and we'll talk about that later. But if you look at Joel Lanning as a whole, you like the 80-20 thing that Jeff said, you know, the first part of the game was great. The end of the game was awful, and he knows that, and that's a huge part of, you know, him maturing. You know, that's a huge part of maturity as a quarterback, learning from your mistakes, being able to make a play the next play. You know, you've got to believe that after that first interception he threw and then Mike Warren comes back and we fumble, that our offense right there is kind of sputtering, looking for confidence. Joel has got to be that rock, someone who can bring confidence to the huddle and make the next thing happen and not worry about the past.
Yeah. And from an analogy standpoint, one thing before we move on, think of Joel's game as a golf game where you drive one right, I mean, it's 300 down the fairway, and then your second shot, you put it on the green, and then your first putt, like you're 10 feet away, and your first putt goes 45 feet into the rough, where you did two excellent things in a row, and you put your within 10 feet in two shots, and then your third shot is so bad that it takes you so many plays to get back to that. So great things on most shots, but one thing can derail all of that really quickly.
And we have to understand that he cannot make those mistakes if we want to win football games. That's the number one thing that's got to come from this, his learning experience and his maturity as a leader, as a quarterback. He's got to understand that, okay, the things that I did at the end of this game directly affected the outcome of this game. Same with Mike Warren. I mean, it can be said for two of our three big playmakers. They directly affected the outcome in a negative way. And that's something that they have to get changed around real quick because it doesn't get much easier after this game.
I'm getting heavy because I have it in my head, and if I don't say something, I just totally forget about it. On a podcast that I do with Jared Stansberry on Cyclone Fanatic, it's the video podcast where I basically break down on film what happened. If you haven't seen it, go just watch the one portion. I mean, I watched the whole thing, but this one particular play what I'm talking about is the safety that we had that Joel. There's two big mistakes that we had. One was, there are six dudes in the box, or six dudes that are blitzing, and one, you have five offensive linemen to block them. So one of them you have to throw hot off of, meaning I take the snap and immediately throw it to somebody. Well, in order to have a reception, there has to be a thrower and a receiver that are on the same page. What happened on that play is that Mike Warren was probably the guy that was the hot. He was the inside receiver to the three receiver side. He was probably the hot route. He didn't look back for four steps, and so Joel wanted to throw it, and Mike wasn't looking at him, so he ate the ball and tried to run backwards. So the two guys that are the captains of the offense take equal responsibility for making a dumb play worse. So, like I said, really good stuff for the most part, but then the guys that you don't expect to make mistakes made really big mistakes.
And here's what I didn't like from the game as a former offensive lineman. I talked about it last week on the show that I thought the game wouldn't be much fun to watch. I didn't think it would be a lot of offense and, you know, exciting compared to what college football's turned to now, because I know it all starts up front, and I know that the offensive line was going to be as bad as it was. And it certainly was. There was no running game, 51 yards on 25 attempts, and Iowa State got murdered in time of possession, 36 minutes to 24. That should never happen against an FCS opponent, ever. And I was quickly reminded that, you know, my full-time job is I cover Boston College basketball. And if that's not the epitome of a Power 5 conference rebuild in college basketball, that's what it is. And I'm in the heart in the middle of that. And I'm quickly reminded that Matt Campbell does have his hands full, and he does have a full-on Power 5 rebuild on his hands. And just like I'm quick to point out to fans that are tweeting me, emailing me over at Boston College stuff that they should fire the head coach, I need to be reminded that give Matt Campbell his time. Obviously, he knows what he's doing, and he did it at Toledo. Give him his time. He's going to be able to turn this thing around, but he has to have the time. You can't be like Kansas and every 2 years fire a head coach because it's not working out. Every time you do that, it's going to turn it over. And that goes for our former teammates who are out there tweeting dumb shit. They don't need to say stuff like that because this thing is going to take time, and it's going to take their lumps. And it started Saturday, and we're going to continue to take our lumps. But over time, if the fan base, the administration, and the former players and the alumni stay with him, he's going to build this thing up, and we're going to be very proud of what he does. And that being said, I talked to about six of our former teammates that are all in the NFL and have played in the NFL. All of them are still behind Matt Campbell, had no idea what that player was tweeting about, and all of them are fully backing Matt Campbell, as the three of us are. So I wanted to get that off my chest. And I think there's only one guy. Yes.
And that tweet has since been deleted.
Yes, of course.
He didn't even own it.
Just like most of his tweets, he didn't own it. Okay, so my question back to the time of possession, Jeff, we haven't really mentioned the defense. The defense was on the field a long time for this game. So is that why they eventually got, you know, you and I in the second half, late second half, was eventually able to move through them and get productive offensive possessions? Or is this something that our defense just isn't quite ready to battle four quarters? Or was it a time of possession? They're tired. They went on the field too long.
It was definitely a time of possession thing. Well, it was 95% time of possession, and they just finally got worn down. And it was 5% having inexperienced defensive linemen. So at one point in the game, Northern Iowa had run 72 snaps to Iowa State's 39. And that is no way to get a defense to function. So what had happened is Iowa State's defense over time, like I said, just got tired. The other 5% of that is they were playing at one time their second rotation, their second, think of it like in hockey where it's a line shift, their second defensive line shift included two true freshmen. And one of them was Jamal Johnson, who plays the nose tackle, and one of them was Jaquan Bailey, who plays a defensive end. And when those guys were in run defense, they were actually pretty good. They were pretty gap sound. In pass defense, they were really bad at staying in their lane, which allowed Bailey to scramble. So it was those are really correctable mistakes, and they're like freshmen learning on the fly. So that was – they got that fixed towards the end of the game. But early in the game, when Northern Iowa did end up moving the ball – it was because you had two freshmen who lost their run lanes when the quarterback dropped back.
So now I want to shift a little bit back over to the offensive side of the ball. Austin, you watched the game. You watched that offensive line. I kind of touched on it. What did you think about the offensive line play on Saturday?
You know, not great. Anytime you get outrushed by a FCS opponent 232-51, you've lost the point of impact battle, you know, that instance when the ball snapped.
Yeah.
Exactly, that line of scrimmage battle. I mean, that's what we lost. And some plays were great, however, they get called back because of holding. I mean, I just think overall, running the football as an offensive line, those guys weren't ready to do it yet. And there's a lot of inexperience, like we talked about. Good to see that Bobek's healthy, just a little wrist ding up. Jeff, you had mentioned earlier. Good to see that he's healthy. But these guys have got to be substantially better next week. I mean, they cannot just come in next week expecting, you know, to do the same things over and for it to work. There's got to be a heightened level of physicality. I mean, these guys got to play harder for longer. We weren't losing at the point of impact, but as an offensive lineman, what's the most important thing, Zach? Your base, your feet. Driving those feet through somebody. And I think at the point of impact, Iowa State –
you got to get moving.
Yeah,
you got to get people out of the way.
Exactly. You can stand somebody up all day, but you got to move them. If you can't move them, they're going to make plays. That's the number one thing. And you and I's linebackers did a great job. And those guys, older guys that have been there, did a great job of running the football and making plays. Great job of reading their keys and getting downhill and seeing. We obviously saw this, you know, football minds watching this. There was a lot of guys assigned to Mike Warren.
Oh, yeah.
With, And I mean, there was guys. Oh, yeah. There were plenty of safeties, linebackers, Key and Mike Warren all night. There was a concerted effort that we don't want two to have the ball in the open field. So that also didn't help into our factor. But we've got to do more things as far as the run game goes. It seems like we ran that flow quarterback read to death. I mean, I understand you want to try and get Warren on the outside, and you want Lanning to be able to read something. However, he missed that read multiple times. So let's do something different. Not completely go away from what we do, but let's do something. Throw some zone reads in there. Throw more. More running back friendly plays, you know, called ISOs, called sweeps. I mean, something to get him the ball in a more concerned effort, because he only touched it once in the first six or seven plays, guys.
Yeah. Hey, Jeff. And so Jeff, I want to pitch this to you, and you could tee off on it. As a running back, Austin kind of at a high level mentioned some of the things that this offensive staff can do to improve the running game, or even more, help the offensive line. How do the Cyclones help Mike Warren get involved and improve this running game with the lack of depth that is on the offensive line? Only six career starts started on Saturday. How do we improve / aid this offensive line right now?
Well, it's to give Mike designed runs, because Tua's a playmaker, like flat out, plain and simple. He's a playmaker. And when you have reads, you give the defense the chance to take the ball out of his hands. So if... like on that quarterback sweep, or that sweep read that Austin was talking about, the running back runs sideways and the quarterback shuffles with him. The front side defensive end, so the side that the running back is running to, you just leave him unblocked. If he runs at the running back, the quarterback keeps it. If he runs at the quarterback, you give to the running back. Well, every time that happened, not only did the defensive end run to the running back, Mike Warren, the safety over the top played hard to stop Mike. So they were sending two guys at Mike Warren, making Joel Lanning keep it. So one of the ways, simply in that exact play, is it doesn't have to be blocked a whole lot different. It doesn't have to be schematically changed. The tight end, instead of leaving that front side defensive end unblocked, you bring the tight end down and block the defensive end and let Mike Warren make a safety miss. Because he may tackle him once, he may tackle him twice, but you give Mike three chances against the safety, he's going to make a miss once and take it for 20, 30, 50, 70.
Yeah.
So one thing, it's not a really big adjustment. It's just giving him the opportunity to get in open space. Now, the other way to do that is designed runs, sort of like going back to a little more of an old school philosophy, like a power or a trap or something like that, where a trap offense is really, really easy to run with a really inexperienced offensive line. Because all it is if I'm – say we're trapping a nose tackle, and he's in between the guard and the center, and we want to run right behind the guard. All you do, because he's already inside the guard, you just tell the guard to block him down and push him over, and the center just pins around behind it. And all it does is just gives easy lanes for the running back to see, and it gives easy angles for the offensive line to have. And on those plays like that, it's not a read. It's a predetermined give that you're running right where they're doing that pin and pull around. So if you're having trouble moving people, you call design runs, you call power plays, you call trap plays to give easy alignments for your running back.
Yeah.
Well, and this is just to go back with the read thing. And I remember being in that spot and, you know, with Coach Herman or, you know, Coach McFarland or, you know, Barney Cotton, whoever it may have been as an offense, we ran zone read with all of them. On the read play, when a quarterback gets the play and it's a called read, you know, there is a concerned effort by the quarterback. I have a chance of keeping this ball. And I think too many times Joel Lanning thought, I'm going to keep this ball before anything ever happened. And that happens at times when you have those misreads and he's hitting the backfield. There were a few guys that were keying on Mike Warren, but there was also a few times where the correct read was to hand the ball off, and Joel Lanning, hearing that word read, kept it and overanalyzed things and kept it for himself. Hey, he saw something he didn't.
Austin, when that's a great thing, and everyone understands how to read and what the quarterback's looking at for the most part, because we hear it so much. But as a quarterback, before the snap, you kind of look at the pre-snap, how everybody's lined up. Do sometimes, you know, I know it's not the right thing to do, but do sometimes before the ball snapped, are you like, okay, he's lined up like that, I'm probably just going to be able to hand it off this play or not be able to hand it off this play? And does that affect you, you know, in the – you know, the first 2 seconds of the play, knowing, hey, I'm going to hand this off, I can take my time, or I know I'm going to pull this, so I need to make this quick and get out of there. Then I want to ask the same thing with Jeff, if that affects, you know, if his pre-snap read affects his movement and stuff, and maybe that's why the running game was getting such a slow start, because Mike Warren knew, hey, Joel's probably just going to keep this.
It depends on, obviously, the running play and what read we're talking about, whether it's a zone read or that flow read that we talked about earlier with Warren, and we did a bunch of on Saturday. But the number one thing that's important about zone read and any read, the quarterback has to know that he has time. He's got a ton of time. He's got to take that ball out there. And we always talked about, no matter what the replay was, you ride front foot from back foot. And so explaining that as in the shotgun, if you're a quarterback, you take a step towards the back, you ride that from, you ride the fake from back foot to front foot. So that can take you, 2-3 seconds. You want to make sure that you're not in a hurry, because that's where you can get into making mistakes. And that's a couple times Joel Lanning pulls it quick and he doesn't let the play develop, and then they're on him, right away. So he's got to let the play develop, take more time, and know that he's got time. You've got time for the running back. I mean, the play's got to develop in the first place. I mean, you're not going to be able to make a decision most of the time off of looking straight at the defense does, especially if you have you never know about squeeze and scrape with the linebackers, where the defensive end comes down and plays the running back. Outside linebacker scrapes outside on the zone read. There's a lot of variables that go into it. The number one thing I would say, though, again, to re-allude the fact, is take your time with it. Take your time with it.
Jeff, because the reason why I want to ask you, does the pre-snap read, or just maybe getting in the flow of the game, knowing my quarterbacks may not hand it to me, would that affect the running back? Because it seemed, as you mentioned, predetermined plays where we know the running back's getting the ball, a counter, a sweep, a power, all those types of things. It seemed like Mike Warren was hitting the hole a little bit harder. And if I'm not mistaken, a lot of his productive runs on Saturday were, design runs.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And what's funny about Austin saying, like, it's too quick on a read or pulling on a read, running backs know when the quarterback makes the wrong read. We know, like, right when it happens.
Absolutely.
And when I know that I shouldn't be getting the ball and I do get the ball, like, there's a half second in your head, you're like, come on.
Oh, shit.
Usually you're getting teed off on, like, the instant that it happens. And it's on the flip side of that, when he keeps it and you know you should get the ball and there's this giant gap to run through, you're like, dude, just make the right decision. So it doesn't really change what we do, because we can't do anything about it. It's all about the quarterback's ability. But just from a psychological standpoint, designed runs are easier for us to see, because I know, like, say we're running as like running back standing next to the quarterback, and instead of leaving usually an inside zone, you leave the backside defensive end. So the defensive end that's aligned to the same side as the running back. Usually you leave him open and read him. There are certain plays where you block that guy and it's just an automatic give. On a play that's an automatic give like that, I kind of like, in the movie A Beautiful Mind, where like just in air he sees all these different equations that are floating around? Running backs and quarterbacks do the same thing, where you're looking at a defense and you're seeing, like, it, not literally, but kind of you see what a chalkboard looks like, where these two guys are going to block this guy and combo to this one. He's going to play over the top here. And I know that my gap is probably going to be right off of this guy, right off this double team. And I know that for a fact, because I'm going to get the ball. So it's easier for me to see, because there's less kind of question up in the air how they're going to react to the read, because I know exactly what they're going to do because I'm going to get the ball. So for me, it's easier for a running back. It's easier to see when it's a predetermined run, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a better play. Because some guys just, like Chantrell Johnson, for example, that dude could just react. Like, he wasn't, he wasn't a guy, and I don't mean this in a negative sense, he wasn't like a guy that's like really cerebral, like he's going to know to a T. Like, for me, I had to do that because I'm not that quick. Chantrell could jump cut like three gaps. So a guy like Chantrell is better off reacting as opposed to thinking. And with someone like Chantrell, just really good in a zone scheme, because he can just take something and make nothing, or make something out of nothing. I can't do that. So for me, I liked having predetermined run plays.
Yeah. So we've talked about all the negatives here, and we talked about what went wrong, what they can do to correct these things, analyze all the ins and outs of it. Let's move to what you guys alluded to at the beginning, kind of in the intro, that all this stuff bad did happen, but a lot of good things happened. I want to get both of your opinions on what you think went well and what you took away as positives, maybe plays, player, a scheme, you know, maybe a certain personnel package or whatever. Arnaud, the quarterback, I'll let you start off. What did you take away from Saturday's loss that you liked?
Well, as cliche as it sounds, I thought the effort was great. I mean, we had guys that were out there. You could tell they hadn't played football in a year. They were excited to get back on the field. You know, the atmosphere at Jack Trice was amazing, as usual. Third biggest crowd in Jack Trice Stadium. So, obviously, the effort was great. Effort's not everything. You got to execute. I liked Coach Campbell's demeanor on the sideline. Yeah. So, that's the number one thing that I liked. That's the number one thing that I liked. It's not that Coach Rhodes was out of control, animated. Coach Rhodes had his moments. The guy was very passionate about what he thought was called, and rightfully so.
Most of that was actually calculated. Where Rhodes didn't just fly off the handle to fly off the handle. He flew off the handle in moments that he felt like we needed to see emotion from a guy. So
exactly.
To just nip that in the bud. No one on this podcast is saying that he was just getting emotional and out of hand. He was doing that in calculated moments.
Agreed, yeah. So Coach Campbell is completely different. You know, very, very calm on the sideline, you know, is talking to the guys. I remember after Joel threw the first bad interception in the fourth quarter, you know, he's sitting there talking to Joel, and they're just having a conversation one-on-one where, you know, some games I saw this weekend, guys are getting ripped for that. So I like to see that player coach kind of communication that looked good on the sideline, and he wasn't all over the place as far as, you know, there was a lot of calls that didn't go our way. Obviously, we had 9 penalties for 89 yards. You didn't see him get too worked up about that. He understands that there's going to be growing pains with this deal.
What about you, Woody?
Now, yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. Austin, you finish.
I got one more.
Hit us with it, Austin.
Alan Lazard. I don't need to say anything more. Get that guy the ball more. He should be targeted 15 times a game. I mean, he is. And also, what I want to see is more of him being backside by himself. The one time we had him backside by himself, good things come of it. If not, it's going to draw defenders away from, you know, the box, inside an outside linebacker helping into the boundary, a safety helping to the field, taking guys out of the box, freeing up Mike Warren, Joel Lanning, that running attack. So Alan Lazard is the biggest positive I'm going to take from this game on Saturday.
I'm going to piggyback off of that, and for my first note, I love the offensive scheme, and for the most part, how it was executed by Lanning, Lazard, and the rest of the crew. I thought pass protection was actually really solid. For the most part,
it was good.
That Carter Schult kid had 15 sacks last year. I think he had one maybe this year, and just that kid's a stud. Like every once in a while, players make plays. But for the most part, the pass protection was really good, and I thought Joel's pocket mechanics got a lot better from last year, where most of the time last year, like, again, going back to that Tuesday podcast, where he would backfoot a lot of it, and he would try and arm everything, which he buried a lot into the ground. His mechanics were a lot better, and that was reflected by 3 gorgeous balls to our big wide receivers. The other thing is how I really like the scheme. Like Austin was saying, get Alan Lazard on a one-on-one. So what he means by on the backside is out of trips, meaning 3 receivers to one side, 1 receiver to the other. If you can have Allen be the guy that's on 1 receiver, you're almost assured the fact that you're going to get a one-on-one coverage. Now, the only time that doesn't happen is they're going to play a guy over the top, and they're going to play him man. If they're going to play a guy over the top, that means the other safety, rather than playing over the 3 receivers to one side, he kind of has to play in the middle of the field because they're so concerned about Allen. And that's how they scored their other 2 touchdowns. So they put Lazard inside the trip, so inside the 3 receiver side. And that beautiful ball to Dondre, which is his first touchdown, which is on, I think, the first drive, Allen was all the way to the trip side to the left. And what that meant, or excuse me, he was the 1 receiver. He was the solo receiver. And they shifted coverage to his side. So he had a corner playing shallow on him and a safety playing deep on him. And the other safety was in the middle of the field. Well, Dondre Daly was the number 1 receiver, the farthest outside receiver, to the trip side, and there was no way the safety or the corner was going to get there. So scheme-wise,
put a lot of pressure on the backers, absolutely, yeah.
They executed it perfectly because there was no chance that if that ball was put where it was put, there was no chance anybody could cover it because Daly's that fast. the same thing with Butler, where Butler was the one receiver side, and they forced the covers to the trip side and then played great on that backside. So there was a lot of really good stuff from an execution point. The second thing that I would say is defensively, they were actually really impressive. And I mean that not in the sense that they did everything perfectly, because obviously they didn't. But from an execution standpoint, they were pretty gap sound, and Northern Iowa didn't start to run the ball until, you know, like I said, they were on the field 2-1 play count, Northern Iowa to Iowa State, until that time when they just started getting fatigued. So even with our lack of depth on the defensive line, guys like Pierre Aka and guys like Vernell Trent had a really solid game holding their gap and letting the blitzers around them make plays. And Reagan Northrup ended up with 13 tackles, and he's playing that in-space outside linebacker. So I thought the defense was actually pretty salty. I thought the secondary is really good, and we get Thad Daniels back, so the secondary is going to be even better next week. So I was really impressed with how the defense played until they got fatigued and general offensive scheme. Now, again, I'm not saying that was perfect on either side, because obviously it wasn't. But for the most part, I think the coaching staff has them going in the right way. Now we just have to consistently execute.
All right, so what I liked about it was both good points by you guys on your several notes there on what you liked, and kind of, you know, to touch on the point that you both brought up about Lazard. I liked it for the first time that I can probably ever remember in my 7-8 years of being associated with Iowa State football and being a fan of it. We saw a real vertical passing game. Now, and I love taking advantage of having 6'6" wide receivers. Akeem Butler went up and made a play. Lazard went up and made a big play on the football, and that's what you got to do. The only other time I ever remember getting down the field in chunks of yardage via the passing game is
Todd Blythe.
Well, yeah, Todd Blythe, but that was before my time. And that was back when I was, you know, all Texas A&M and Texas and Texas Tech growing up in this neck of the woods down here. But Chris Young, Aaron Horn, and Josh Lynn's throwing tunnel screens to them and having them take it 70 yards to the house. That was literally the only other time I remember us grabbing big chunks of yardage down the field, making big plays. And then, so that was awesome to see vertical pass game. I want to see us continue to take advantage of the big wide receivers that they have. And I thought DeMond Tucker showed flashes early in the game. Would love for him to continue to play four quarters and be able to dominate on that defensive line. Now,
one more before we move to Iowa. Mitchell Myers, and this isn't just – so one of the things about Mitch is he doesn't like a lot of attention, and he doesn't prefer to be known as, like, the cancer kid. He likes to be known as Mitchell Myers, the football player, or Mitchell Myers, the great kid. So I'm not saying this Mitchell Myers cancer boy. I'm saying Mitchell Myers' defensive end had a hell of a game. They contained a lot. Most of the big plays were scrambles by the quarterback when he had to try and just get out of some jam that we were putting him in. So Mitchell Myers and Gabe Luna and Justin Thomas, the guys that were playing defensive end, had a hell of a game. And I think Mitch is the one that leads that group. So the defensive ends played really, really well.
Yeah, and awesome to see him back out on the field for several reasons. And I know the depth of having him back is also needed as far as the football team. So now let's switch to preview quickly the Iowa game. Obviously, this is a big week for the entire state of Iowa. It's a big game for both sides, as both teams kind of play to each other's level each and every year. I mean, I remember my senior year, we beat UNI 20-19 open the year. Jeff, you were on the team, and then everyone was dogging us. Everyone said that we weren't going to win, that we were going to have a down year, it was going to be a bad year, and we went in, we won the game, 44-41 in triple overtime in Ames. So this is a great way for this team to be able to quickly respond, play well against Iowa, and, you know, kind of erase all the doubters that they created from the UNI game. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but they have that opportunity too, just like we did back in 2011. Now, quickly, Austin, I think this is a great question for you, because you're from the state of Iowa. You're from Ames, and Jeff, you're from Iowa too, but Austin, you're from Ames. You are Iowa State. Your father played for Iowa State. You grew up knowing more than likely you were going to play quarterback at Iowa State. Talk about what this game means for the state of Iowa kids, and you were the quarterback. Everybody that didn't wear Cardinal and gold on Saturdays hated your guts. Talk about this game, what it means all week long and all year long, and specifically for that 3.5 hours on Saturday.
Well, it's no surprise it's no surprise to anyone. There's no professional sports teams in this state besides your amateur hockey and those types of things. So this game is king. I mean, Iowa State, Iowa football every year, you know, it's a big tailgate. It's a big everything for the state. So I think one thing that always it comes into play is heightened awareness. You know you're playing Iowa, where, you know, there's been that clock in the weight room, and there's been the clock in, you know, the locker room. There's always a countdown to Iowa. And, you know, whether people want to say that Iowa State gets up more than this game than Iowa does, I totally disagree with that. I think it's very important to both teams. It's not just another game. Everyone wants to say that it is. It's not just another game. It's Iowa State versus Iowa. Both teams are wanting to win this game to bring home the Cy-Hawk Trophy to each respective side. And there's a lot of extracurriculars that play into the game. I know, you know, there's talk about how, you know, as far as Iowa's non-conference schedule, you know, North Dakota State's the best team that Iowa's going to play in the non-conference.
Yeah,
I'm sure Iowa State is aware of that. But there's just a lot of things that go on when you come to this week. I mean, a lot of kids, and this is no secret either. A lot of kids that play football at Iowa have scholarship offers from Iowa State. Vice versa, not really so much. I mean, Alan Lazard was offered by Iowa. I think Joel Anning was too late in the game. There's not a lot of kids on Iowa State's roster that have scholarship offers from the University of Iowa. So there's the chip on your shoulder type attitude for the Iowa State kids. But more than anything, I think it's going to be interesting to see how Coach Campbell handles this rivalry, because exactly what it is. It's a rivalry. It's something that means a lot to this state, a lot to Cyclone fans. So Iowa State is going to be ready for this game. Now, they're playing a very good Iowa team, and we'll see how it goes. But the week building up is probably, you know, the most fun you have all season, because you know it's there's a little bit more on the line. And both schools think that way. Don't kid yourself when Iowa fans say that, well, the Cyclone fans get up for this, you know, the Cyclone players get up for this. No, the playing field becomes level because there is that in-hate, there's an in-state rivalry, you know, not hatred, but there's that, you know, I played against you in high school, let's go at it again, that type of thing.
And you talk about the playing field becoming level. She was actually 3-2 over the last 5 years against Iowa, holding the edge. Iowa scoring 24.4 points per game in the series over the last 5 years. Iowa State's just under them at 22.2. The Cyclones lost last year 31-17 and won in 2014 20-17. Jeff, quickly, when you think Iowa State, Iowa from your playing time, what clicks your mind? Is it the pink locker room? Is it seeing all the celebrities, all the Iowa celebrities that come out for the game, whether it's in Ames or Iowa City? What about this game clicks your mind when someone says Cy-Hawk Week?
I think for me, and this is me as a native Iowan and as an Iowa State football player and as now an Iowa resident, I think the thing that stands out most to me is how this week brings out the best in our state. Mm-hmm. Where most other rivalries that you're going to go to, you know, you go to Auburn, Alabama, you go to Florida, Florida State, you go to other rivalries, like it's bad blood, hatred, mean, nasty rivalries. Here, it's good-natured ribbing. You talk crap to each other for 5 days, and then all of a sudden, Saturday rolls around, you dislike the other team for like 3 hours at a time, and then afterwards, you shake your buddy's hand and you go, hey, that was tough. I mean, we got you this time. You got to, you know, shave an eye into the back of your head, whatever that joke prop bet was. But it's a friendly rivalry, and it brings out kind of this good-natured ribbing competitiveness that we have in our state. And it does get kind of annoying because I won this game twice and I lost this game twice. And it's annoying when you lose because, you know, your Hawk relatives are like, we got you this time. And it's kind of fun to trash talk the other way. But I think for the most part, it's just good natured fun. The other thing that sticks out from an actual game perspective that I was actually fun to prepare for because it's so simple.
Yeah.
That from an offensive player on Iowa State to looking at the Iowa defense, they haven't done a damn thing different since 1985. They run four down, three linebackers, two deep, man under. Every single play, except maybe, I don't know, a half dozen or a dozen throughout the game. They're going to play four down linemen, not blitz. They're going to play two deep safeties, not playing man with their safeties. And they're going to play man coverage underneath. And they say, beat us. And that's the thing that's fun about Iowa Week, is because you don't necessarily have to look at scheme because you know their scheme. You get to look at, where's my advantage in personnel, and what does that guy do that I can take advantage of him?
Yeah, and Austin, we always hear about the – and you all used to tell me this all the time, and you still tell me it all the time. After week one of NFL season and college season, you always tell me the biggest improvements – is always from week one to week two. Coach Herman used to tell us this all the time, and everyone listening to this podcast has probably heard it a billion times, and probably a lot of those times were this week by somebody covering college football. What does that really mean, though, Austin? Why are we seeing improvements over week one to week two?
It is still the same amount of time as far as preparation goes, but it's always mentally as a player, it's always good seeing yourself that first time on film. And whether it's a glaring against somebody else, exactly. Whether it's the glaring mistakes you made or the things you did good that you can pat yourself on the back from, there's that, okay, we played against someone else not named Iowa State. We did good here, here, and here. Here's what we could have improved. And I think guys really, you know, it's before, you know, the season is a grind, and this is still early on. So right now, mentally, it's not, it's not like here we go again, back-to-back games, blah, blah, blah. This is a time for them to collectively look and say, okay, here's what we did. Here's what we have to do and improve. And I think that's where you see the most progress made, because you see guys that, you know, there's a concerned effort. Not that there's not a concerned effort later in the year. I'm just saying there's a more concerned effort from week one to week two, because there's a lot of things still lying on jobs. I mean, guys are still fighting for jobs out there. So that's where you see the improvement. You see a guy that maybe last week against you and I didn't play very much. Maybe plays a lot more in this Iowa game because he took the practice reps seriously, made a great strides in practice, and as a guy competing for a job. So that's why I think you see the biggest improvements from one to two.
And you can maneuver people around, move someone from the second team to the first team back down to the second team, because you've finally been able to evaluate it against an actual starter on a college level program, rather than just, especially Matt Campbell's staff, just basing it on what they've seen on practice tape and don't really know the talent level of, you know, the depth of their team. Jeff, last thing before we get out of here and get to the gambling segment and turn this microphone off, how can Iowa State go into Iowa City and win the game on Saturday?
Well, to pigtail this conversation that we had about improvement, especially with a brand new coaching staff, they've never seen anybody play against anyone else. So it's all theoretical. Like, I think pick your position. I think our slot receiver is going to be really good at running routes against a corner who plays X. And then you actually get to see it, because you get to see what a defense is going to do, not what our defense does, what a defense is going to do when they don't know the plays, they don't know the personnel, and they just react. So you get to actually see what you have. So from a coaching staff perspective, you get to analyze. So I would expect a lot of different position changes and a lot of guys getting a vastly different share of the reps. Conversely, the guys now understand. So we say there's a new play call. I don't know. And we call it, pick a random word. We call it onions. And the play is onions. And it's my coach tells me on onions, I have to get this specific technique. I've got to be a strong right hand with a hat placement to this side. And we run it in practice, and the scout team knows what it is. And it's hard to see. And I dominate that freshman that's playing across from me. But then in the game, and I don't get this strong right hand, and I don't get this hat play side on that onion play call, then all of a sudden it gets blown up in my face. Then the players get to see, like, oh, this is what you meant when you said to do this. Mm-hmm. So I now take this much more seriously because I see the effect that it doesn't have. So how does Iowa State win? Is they make the proper adjustments to fix the stupid mistakes they had last week.
You can't make stupid mistakes against the Hawks.
Right, exactly. And that's they base their defense off of you. Like I said, they play two deep safeties, they play four down front, they don't blitz you, they say, you're going to make a mistake and we're going to take advantage of it. So it's not making those stupid mistakes, it's making solid, sound, fundamental plays, and also listening to what the team told you it was good to do last week and not doing the things that it wasn't. So more design runs for Mike Warren, less quarterback read, stuff like that, where it's just generally listening to what the team is going to tell you. The other side of this is players make plays, man. Like, Alan Lazard is going to get Desmond King on every single snap. Desmond King is the best defensive back in the country, mm-hmm. but I feel like Alan Lazard in a one-on-one situation, due to his size and strength, is not guardable in a one-on-one situation every single down. Now, King's going to win some, Lazard's going to win some, but players got to make plays. So from a perspective of don't make mistakes and go out and just do something fun, do the things that you're capable of doing. So I think Iowa State, they're in a decent position despite what happened last week. Clean up the stuff you made mistakes on and listen to what your team's capable of doing.
So, Austin, you want to take us into the gambling segment now that we've wrapped up the UNI loss and previewed Iowa for Cyhawk Week? Obviously, a big week in the state of Iowa, and can't wait to watch that game each and every year. Austin, what we got on the gambling segment this week?
Well, it wouldn't be right unless we did do the college game that we are talking about, fellas.
Is that legal? Are we able to do that?
What do you mean we're not putting money on it?
In the state of North Carolina, in the state of North Carolina, I can do it.
Not advocating gambling, of course.
What's the line? What's the line on the Cy-Hawk game, Austin?
It opened at 18. It's already down to 14.5 that I saw earlier today. So we'll just call it 14.5, two touchdowns in the hook. Iowa State or Iowa. Zach, you go ahead first.
I think Iowa State loses by less than two touchdowns.
All right, so you got Iowa State covering the spread.
Yep,
Come on. So one of these weeks you're going to figure out. I'm taking Iowa State and the points is how you correctly answer that question.
Continue, Jeff. I'm taking Iowa State and the points.
There you go. Now you sound like a
quick learner. It's only been a year and a half.
You sound like a proper degenerate.
There we go.
Yeah, I think there are two times in the last 10 years has this game gotten outside of 14 points. So absolutely give me Iowa State in the points. You're giving me 14 to take? Yes.
14.5. We're all on the same wavelength here, I think. NFL, we got a big one. This is especially big for my man Z, Zach Spears.
Man.
Dallas is at home, and it is a pick 'em. They got the New York football Giants coming to town and Shelai Manning. What do you got, Zach?
Man, I'm going to go with the Giants in this game. Because I know
he would typical Cowboy fan.
No,
oh my gosh!
I'm smart because I know how important a quarterback is in football, especially NFL. And I know nothing about the Dallas Cowboys starting quarterback. And the backup is Mark Sanchez, the Sanchez. But I do know that Eli Manning has won two Super Bowls and is a Pro Bowl level quarterback and can make things happen. But it hurts me. But I do think the Giants win.
Okay, side note here, before Jeff gets his pick, you know, how about them rolling out the red carpet for Sanchez? Sanchez, come, you can have a box, watch your college team play. Oh, wait, you play Alabama and you lost 6-3, 52-3, whatever it was.
It was ugly.
Welcome to Dallas. Welcome to Dallas, Mark. Your team is awful. USC's got problems, guys.
I'm going to agree. The only thing that gives me pause about that is that I have no idea what New York's running game is going to be like. And I have a pretty good idea that Dallas is going to be able to run the ball. Yeah, sure, great. And defensively, New York got torched for a big portion of last year. So if Dak can come out and tear even like a percentage, because he was freaking Joe Namath in preseason.
He's better than Joe.
If he's at like 80% of that, then yeah, Dallas can win. But I don't feel comfortable picking until I know what I got.
Exactly, that's how I feel.
I lean towards experience. Eli Manning's been there before. He's played a lot of big games in Dallas. Dak Prescott, that's going to be a lot of fun. There's not a lot of games that I'll turn into besides the Minnesota Vikings and obviously the Thursday night game, which is, you know, free football.
Yes!
But I'm going to turn it. Yes! I want to turn into the Cowboys game. I want to turn into the Cowboys game for the simple fact that I want to watch Dakota Prescott and see what he's got.
I'm excited to watch what the Cowboys are going to do on offense now with, you know, a mobile quarterback that also can probably take some licks due to his body size in the type of game that he plays. Because it's obviously going to look.
And he's not Tony Romo?
Right. It's going to obviously look a lot different than what the Cowboys have done over the last, you know, 9, 8, 9, 10 years. So I'm excited about that. I'm not expecting much, but I'm excited to see what this Dallas Cowboys offense could look like with someone else at quarterback besides Tony. But I'm still crossing my fingers and wishing Tony to get back as quick as possible.
Thursday night. I'm so excited. Who plays Thursday?
AJ Klein and the Carolina Panthers. And your Broncos, sorry.
Yes.
Hey, Trevor Siemian and the Friday Broncos.
We could have a whole show on that entire quarterback situation throughout the
Broncos. The Broncos are going to average 14 points in the year and average giving up 13.
Well, yeah.
That's the way the season's going to roll.
And their defense is good enough.
That sounds like a nap. One thing I wanted to say, guys, about this matchup this week, you know, we always we talked about in the past and us being together for those years at Iowa State, win two of the three. You can win offense, defense, or special teams. If you can win two of those three, offense, defense, special teams, if Iowa State can get an explosive play, get explosive plays on offense and win the special teams battle, they got a chance, guys. They got a chance.
I hope so.
Joel, also, make sure you cover, because old number 14 is a damn good returner. He's a damn good returner. You cover him.
And also, shout out to our loyal listener, Tom Herman, and his University of Houston Cougars on the big win Saturday.
Against OU. Are we surprised, guys? Are you surprised?
Not. Really, not at all, actually. not even a little bit.
Good for him and all the guys that we know that are on his staff down there. And
you know what I was surprised about? You know what I was surprised about is Yancey McKnight having a beard. That's what I was surprised about.
A little salt and pep, baby.
You see that? Letting it grow a little bit. Getting grizzly down in Houston.
I love it.
Oh, that'll do it for us. Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Barely Audible on CycloneFanatic.com. Make sure you tune into us each week as we talk all things Iowa State football, breaking down games, schemes, assignments, stats, and previewing Cyclones games. We'll talk to you next week. Go State. Peace.